literature with us. Now, before me is Whitehold. This is easier. I'm just looking directly at him. And he's brought an instrument that we'll talk about in a little bit. It's the sound of a cello, but it is electric. It has six strings, and you'll get a chance to listen to it, and then we'll talk a little bit about it. Here is Whitehold. Whitehold at the Saturday Lloyd Brigade. That was fun. And I want to learn a little bit more about the instruments and also the person. First of all, you should know that was all created by one person live in real time. As you were listening to it, I'll bet it sounded like three or four musicians were here. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me. I'm great.
And you're in from D.C., right?
I'm in from Washington, D.C., yeah.
And it's good to have you here. It's W-Y-T-O-L-D.
Exactly.
And that was your composition, right?
Right. That was an original song that's actually going to be coming out on a new album. It's a newer song called Know Me.
And this instrument is curious, right?
Six
wound steel strings that are all the same thickness, I think. Maybe not.
The thicknesses vary. So we've got I've got a six-string electric cello, and the four middle ones are the traditional strings on an acoustic cello that I grew up playing in middle school and high school. What you hear, that's the C, G, D, A. I have an extra low F, which puts me into the bass range.
Nice.
And an extra high E, which when you combine that high E with the fact that I don't have a body of a cello, I just have a stick that is shoulder strapped to me, I can go way up into the violin range a lot more easily than you might on the traditional cello.
Now, what's interesting about this instrument is, like an electric guitar, were it not plugged in, it would make virtually no sound.
Right.
And it's therefore very small. These strings, I guess, are they the same length as the strings on a cello?
They are the same length. It just doesn't have the big resonating cavity of the, you know, the wood chamber of the acoustic instrument, which, you know, the wood chamber gives the acoustic instrument a lot of character that I love and, you know, cello fans absolutely love. But one benefit of this is it has a slightly different tone that is very pretty to blend with that traditional wood sound, which I do on my album, and I do kind of a double cello setup live sometimes where I'm switching back and forth between the instruments. And then because the electric cello doesn't make much noise by itself without amplification, it's a great practice tool. You won't bother your roommate or neighbors. You can just plug right into your headphones and play at all times.
Yeah, it's deceiving. You know, you think of a cello as a huge instrument, but when you take away the body, it's kind of like, you know, when the peacock puts its feathers down, it's not quite as big as you thought it was. So you started playing cello as a youngster, I guess, fifth grade.
And I didn't actually – I wanted to play any musical instrument I could get my hands on except the cello. The cello was the last one that I wanted to try. My mom was a big cello enthusiast and really wanted me to play because she had played – the cello in high school, and her mom had played the cello in high school, and they still had that same cello that was passed on from generation to generation.
And that therefore made it your least preferred instrument.
That therefore, yeah, her most preferred and my least preferred, exactly.
So you played in band and orchestra?
Yeah, I played in strings class. I played in, you know, local youth, regional, all county orchestras. I took private lessons in the classic cello repertoire, intending to go on to study classical cello performance at college. And, you know, I really miss playing with an orchestra sometimes. That was so much fun.
Did you do that, end up studying music?
I didn't actually get to. When the time came around to audition for college, I was unable to play because I had such a bad case of carpal tunnel syndrome.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, so I actually had to take almost 2 years off from music entirely, and the carpal tunnel syndrome came from playing cello. In particular, it came from playing, you know, 6 hours a day and not practicing very smartly. I would just practice the hardest things, the fastest things at their full tempo over and over again, and I would clench the instrument with kind of a death grip in both hands.
I've never heard of that happening at such a young age.
Yeah,
for
I was diagnosed
a musician.
When I was 15.
Wow. That had to be heartbreaking for you to not be able to play for 2 years.
It was. It really was. It was a sad time. And, you know, you can tell by, I just was at that point, I had changed from kind of resenting the cello like I did in fifth grade to just being in love with it, wanting it to be my career.
You're like, see, Mom, I told you the cello was bad.
You know? Yeah, that's funny. I always think of I think of it as I kind of vindicate that parent who wants to force an instrument on their child. But it maybe at that point when I got carpal tunnel syndrome, it was the opposite.
So I think you've developed the concept here that is novel, right? I don't know of anyone who's doing quite what you're doing here. And at least in the first song you played, I heard some very accessible and melodic classical, not in a classical music sense, but in a classical song sense, so to speak, and then punctuated with some things that almost sounded like they were from other parts of the world and just other ranges. Has this been something you've been working on? It's awfully hard to put into words exactly what it is you're doing, but I can tell you've put a lot of thought behind it.
Absolutely. A lot of thought and a lot of time goes into what you're hearing today. I think so. Some of my songs started as when I got back into playing music after my 2-year hiatus due to carpal tunnel syndrome. I had started out on the acoustic guitar because it was just easier on my hands. It was a brand new instrument and I didn't have any preconceptions of I'm going to go in there and play concertos or really fast scales or anything. And so I kind of developed a singer-songwriter sensibility on the guitar that I tried to transfer back to the cello when I felt ready to pick it up again. And so I took some of those techniques from my guitar playing, the strumming, the finger picking, the thinking of in terms of riffs and verses and choruses and bridges. I took those and combined them with my classical training. Again, a certain set of bowing techniques and phrases and double stops and now I call the result progressive classical music, blending classical inspiration and technique with, you know, contemporary song structures and rhythms and grooves.
We should take another listen. If you're just tuning in, Wytold is here, and he does have a new CD coming out. He's really received some terrific honors. Are you originally from Pittsburgh?
I'm not originally from Pittsburgh. I'm originally from Virginia, just outside D.C., but I lived in Pittsburgh for 3.5 years when I was studying at Pitt and playing music with Erica May and writing a songwriting trio that we had and called Between Liberties, and that was a really great time.
I remember you from that. We'll keep claim to you, a little bit of claim to you as having sallied forth here. We're sullied.
Both.
You left your stain on Pittsburgh as you sullied the city. So let's once again take a listen to Wytold. What song or what's the name of what you're about to play?
This song is called Going For It, and it's off of my first album, which is available at wytold.com. And also, fun fact about this song, it's featured in a Pittsburgh-based independent film that is soon to be released called Blood Brother. Which is a really powerful film about a guy that grew up in Pittsburgh and moved to India to help a community of HIV-infected children in India. And I'm very honored to be a part of that film.
This is called Going For It, Wytold. Thank you. Weitold at the Saturday Light Brigade, the show that gets your weekend off to a good start Saturday mornings on public radio. That was fun. And
thank you.
I was curious, you may have, I don't know how you could notice anything while you're playing, but if you noticed me, I was looking at your website as you were playing. because I was starting to think, where does one perform this music?
Mm.
And first of all, I'm delighted to see that you're going to be at Zenith tomorrow.
I am, yeah.
Over on the south side. And do you know the time offhand?
11 a.m. is when I start.
Okay, so you'll be there for
the brunch. Yep.
Great. So the Zenith over on the south side. And I see also you're at the Torpedo Factory, one of my favorite places in Old Town,
yes.
Which is right at the end of King, I think.
King
Street?
Yep. In Alexandria.
Yeah, in Old Town Alexandria, which is a great place to play. And then at the Strathmore Mansion. Now, mm-hmm. I don't know the Strathmore Mansion.
Sure.
Is that a museum? Or?
It is a performance place slash historic mansion slash art gallery. And they host all kinds of events throughout the year. In particular, they also host the Artist in Residence program that I'm a part of.
And that's congratulations on that.
Thank
that
you.
Has to be a real honor to be an artist in residence there.
It's amazing. It's such an incredible group of talented people there with so many resources for me to grow over the next year.
Have you busked like this?
I sure have. Actually, when I moved back to the D.C. area from Pittsburgh, I was looking for work and busked quite a bit with acoustic cello and electric cello on different times. This is a little bit more portable to take out to the metro stop or wherever you might go.
We're playing for money with an open case.
Busking.
Some people don't know the expression busking, but being out there basically playing for money with an open case. But it's actually, I think people would be fascinated. You would really be good at calling attention to yourself, building up a crowd, and that's
right.
I was curious.
Yeah, it seems that pretty much anywhere, no one really expects to see an electric cello playing, but especially not when you're on your way to or from your daily routine with work.
Have you ever heard of a fiddler violinist named Daryl Anger?
Daryl Anger? No, actually.
It's not at all similar. I mean, it's not. I'm not saying that you two are playing in the same styles, but he's also doing and has for years been doing very inventive things.
Okay.
That blend different styles of music together. When you mentioned progressive classical, it made me think of him. I'll see if we have some here to play for you either on the air or later, because
I
think you'd enjoy hearing him. And actually, as you were playing, I kept thinking to myself, now this boy, somebody I know would really love this, and it's that artist I was trying to remember.
I'd love to hear it.
Yeah, I think you would like it. So I can't imagine, when you were in a rock band or a pop band, you'd be playing probably a bar here and there. This is not, your venue really, it seems like an art gallery is perfect.
Art galleries are perfect, yes. I've done a number of, gala events at art spaces that it just fits really well.
A brunch
is great.
Because it's real. I'm trying to think, how do you do this? Because you don't, I'm sure there are times when you play at a brunch where people are just sort of chomping down their food and not watching you,
right.
And you become oral wallpaper, which is the bane of just about any musician anyway sometimes. But in your case, unlike a harpist or a classical guitarist, people are really going to watch.
Right.
And what kind of reaction do you get?
Often, we'll be in an otherwise loud environment and you find that the audience quickly quiets down and is attentive to what you're doing. And, especially once they pick up on that live layering that I do of the multiple cello sounds, when they realize that I'm not playing with a backing track, but I'm actually recording one bit, playing it back, adding another layer, playing it back and then building melodies on top of that, that's when they get hooked and that's when they get quiet.
That's got to be really powerful when you've got a large room and all of a sudden, does it ever make, I don't know if I would say make you nervous, but I mean, that's a power. I was in a room the other day where a girl started singing, a teen started mm-hmm. singing. She was about 16.
Okay.
And she was just singing to one person she was with. There uh-huh. were about 50 people in the room. And everybody started to quiet down, and all eyes were facing her. Her eyes were closed, and the room got really quiet because she had a beautiful voice. And when she opened her eyes, she mm-hmm. was, you know, she had no idea that she had called attention to herself that
way. Yeah.
And that's got to be quite a feeling when that happens.
It is quite a feeling. And when you start thinking about it before you play, and there's this added dimension with the live layering where you better do it right the first time or else it's going to get recorded and it's going to get played back, you know, out of tune or out of time or whatever. And you got to figure out how to roll with it and move on. It can be a lot of pressure when you really think about it.
Yeah, I want to learn more about that, but I also want to be sure we have you play another song.
Sure.
But this try to listen for this as you listen to the next song, because what Whitehold is doing is, you know, nothing exists at the beginning. It's just the man and the six-string instrument. And you'll hear him create certain parts that you'll hear repeating through use of a digital recorder that loops. And you'll hear the whole song, you know, building up, not to give away the secrets, but you'll hear it building up. And think about, if you want to, how difficult that must be. But you might be able to hear the construction now that you know that information as you hear this being created. What do you want to play? What's the name of it?
Well, do you think, is this the last one? Or is this?
Thanks for asking. I think we have time for a couple more.
Oh, okay, great. Well, in that case,
I'm forgetting my responsibilities.
No problem. Absolutely. In that case, I think, you know, I've played a couple of originals for you. I think I'm going to do an arrangement of a non-original. It's a remix of a song that was very inspirational to me growing up in the classical cello repertoire. This is a, as you'll soon see, a very different arrangement of the prelude to Bach's first unaccompanied cello suite. Thank you.
Whitehold at the Saturday Light Brigade. That is so fun to watch. Do you ever?
Thank you.
This is a, I'm going to ask you a silly question.
Sure.
But do you ever forget whether you're playing or whether the loop is playing or which part you're playing? Like, do you ever? I would.
Well, but it's tricky because you have to switch mindsets very quickly. You have to be planning a little bit what you're going to play next, but also be in the moment with the bass line you're playing, the chord progression, the couple bars out of Bach, or the improvisation on top of it. So it's a lot of different roles to rapidly rotate through.
So let's talk about two things. First, how you actually develop these arrangements. How do you?
Well, it varies song to song. Some songs I originally had conceived of in like a live band setting, and I thought, how can I reach that point of the, you know, the rhythm guitar, lead guitar, bass line, how can I reach that point all by myself on a cello?
Yeah.
And I build it up one by one, but keep it moving musically, not just feel like one big build, you know, you're waiting for the song to move on. And then some songs I've conceived of entirely through the playing around with a loop pedal. I will be sitting, you know, watching TV or whatever, hear a riff in my head that I haven't heard before that I really like, say, I've got to go record that. I've got to see what I can do with it. I'll put it on the loop pedal so I can hear it over and over again. And eventually I find another layer that sounds really good with it. Or I find a chorus that it sounds really good to go into from that original layer. And you just work with it and build it over time. I try and give it a lot of space. You know, some of these songs I won't rush. I'll let it sit for a year and wait for that right layer to come in, or that right progression, or to figure out where the song should go. So
it's not and the other part of this I was curious about is just the technical dexterity. I mean, I know looping pedals or looping equipment a little bit, but you were mentioning it before, generate and collect these parts, it requires a lot of precision and accuracy, tuning, tempo. But there's also just the aspect of activating the button at the right time.
Right.
And can you talk about that a little bit? Because maybe I'm just overly fascinated. Like if I saw somebody driving a car for the first time, maybe I'd be just as curious. But I don't think so. I think this is pretty amazing to be playing very intricately and at the same time having to do physical and even mental types of things as you're playing.
It's very tricky, and you know, I think that's part of why it took me so long to develop some of these tunes, and especially to begin performing them out. I might have figured out a configuration of sounds that sounds good together, but getting the dexterity, like you said, to where you can just go out and perform it in a succinct song structure is really tricky. So basically at my feet, I have three different channels of which I would consider a verse or chorus and pre-chorus or bridge, depending on the song. And I tell it when to start recording, when to stop recording, when to switch between the channels. And there aren't really, those are the three main functions, but to manipulate those three simple functions into a song structure is really pretty tricky. And you also need to tell it when to not record you if you're going to be doing a melody that you don't want to hear over and over again. So, you know, while I'm playing, I'm having to glance down at the pedal, hit the right one at the right time. There's some leeway. I don't have to tell it to stop on a dime. I can tell it to stop at the end of the measure that I'm currently playing in. But it's still, you know, pretty tricky.
One thing, too, and I don't mean to get so analytical.
No,
I'm just fascinated. Is a lot of folks would... what's interesting to me is you're using the tools here, the digital tools, but you're using them in a very classical way in that you're not, I don't think, introducing echo or unusual effects, like flanged effects or anything. What you're really hearing are a bunch of stringed instruments as if they were acoustic. And
exactly.
I don't know if that's by if that's a pure choice that you've made as part of your art, or if it just happens to be what we've heard today.
That's more of a choice, actually. I do tend to generally prefer the natural, you know, cello tone. And of course, I'm saying that playing on an electric cello.
That's what's remarkable about it, because I was actually feeling some cello vibrations as you're playing, and I had to take my headphones off for a second because I was trying to figure out why is this happening, because the cello is, I think, resonates pretty close to the human voice, which is
it really does.
Why people seem to respond so well to the cello. And I'm thinking, how is this happening? But it's because everything is so pure as it mixes together, it almost, I hate to say trick, but you know, it felt like a traditional wooden cello was vibrating in the room here with us.
So. Oh, that's great. Yeah, you know, I guess it has been a choice to just try and preserve that sound that I love and that, you know, strings players love. I do have some pieces that involve a little bit of delay or something, but you don't really want to stray too far from it because if you love what you got, why not just work with that?
Yeah, well, it's been fun to have you here.
Thank you.
Let's be sure. It's whytold.com, right?
Yes.
WYTOLD.com. Mm-hmm. And there's a new CD coming out soon called When Fulvio Finds Celeste.
Actually, When Fulvio Finds Celeste is already out.
Yeah.
And it was supported by a young artist grant from the D.C. Commission on Arts and Humanities.
Yeah, I misread my notes.
Oh, it's fine.
It says right here it's out.
No problem. So if you go to whytold.com, you can listen to and download that now. The other thing that you can listen to there is a holiday EP that I just released a few days ago. Well, no, a week ago. It's a 3-track EP that kind of blends together many different carols. And maybe I should play a track from that.
Yeah, that would be great. And thank you. This is our last chance to talk. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's a real pleasure to be here. And thanks to Erica May for setting this up and cooking me a yummy breakfast this morning.
Wow, you rate. Once again, here's Whytold. And we'll get a little jump on the season here. It is November.
This one is the theme song. Not a traditional Christmas carol, because it's a little bit earlier for that, but it is on the holiday EP. It's the theme song from the early 80s short animated film called The Snowman, where a young boy and the snowman that he made go flying over the forest. Thank you.
Weitold, thank you for being here with us today. We're going to say hello.